Good morning, and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first part of the show today, we'll be talking about exercise, about what it does for you, both physically and psychologically, and perhaps talk a little bit about how people who, if you want to include more exercise in your life, you're just not quite sure how to do it, what might work best for you, how to stay motivated. We could try to talk about some of those things, too. And we have two guests with us here in the studio. Both of them work in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health. We have Marnie Boppert. She is assistant professor. And also Steve Pedrazzello. He is associate professor. In addition, Marnie Boppert has a joint appointment at the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology. They have slightly different areas of interest, but they both come at this topic with experience and are in a position here, I think, probably to talk a little bit about the basics and maybe give people some advice if they're thinking about trying to get started or stay on it once they've started an exercise program. So we welcome questions, and I know the two of them, both of them will do their best to give you an answer. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also do have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And there's also email, so you want to send your question that way, you can do that at will-talk@illinois.edu. That's the address. Hey, thank you both very much for being here. The two of them were both talking a little bit about their exercise routines, and I was feeling just totally shamed by the fact that they are, that for them is a regular part of your life. But I guess because that's your field of, maybe that's why it is your field of study. Have you always been, would you say, a very active person?
Oh, absolutely. From childhood, grew up as a tomboy, you know, surrounded by boys in the neighborhood, kickball, dodgeball, baseball, you know. So life, for sure.
Yeah. Same thing. I mean, growing up as a kid, it's getting to be a long time ago now, but, you know, you'd go outside and you'd play until it got too dark. And you're just outside doing something. It's football in the fall, it's basketball, it's baseball. Whoever's available, neighborhood kids are together doing their thing. And then it just kind of kept going, and now I don't know if I could really get through the day without it. So,
I'm sure one of the things that we'll talk about is for people who don't, for whom that kind of physical activity is just not part of their daily routine, but they would want it to be, how you do that, you know, how you get to that point where it's so much a part of what you do that you would say, well, I could not imagine not doing it. Let me take a step back here, and let's talk about what goes on in the body with regular physical exercise. And certainly there is a pretty long list of benefits that we're told about that have to do with all kinds of things like blood sugar and blood pressure and your fitness of your heart and a whole bunch of things. You know, what are some of the basic things that exercise will do for you?
Yeah, I think I can address that because I teach a course on campus to a number of students talking about just that, the benefits of exercise. And and what we really emphasize is the impact that exercise and physical activity in general has on the cardiovascular system. Of course, it allows for a decrease or optimum heart rate. It allows for the ability for the heart to pump blood to all the tissues within the body, which is really important for those tissues to receive nutrients and oxygen. So for really optimal health in general, bodily health. My research really focuses on skeletal muscle, the benefits of exercise on skeletal muscle, which really makes up most of the mass within the body. And, the benefits are such that it allows our muscles to optimally extract the oxygen and the nutrients from that bloodstream so that we can, really have the ability to perform activities of daily life. You know, so if we go grocery shopping, we can, pick up a bag of groceries and take them home. We can walk to different places. We can feel good about ourselves.
Yeah. I come at it more from I'm a psychophysiologist by training, which sounds fancy, but all it really means is I'm interested in looking at the interactions that things that happen physically do to our minds and vice versa. And I've been really interested in the psychological effects of exercise and physical activity really since I was a graduate student a long time ago. And we know from a growing number of studies, in addition to the physical benefits that Marnie was talking about, people who exercise or who are physically active are less likely to be depressed, are less likely to be anxious. They typically have better mental health. And that doesn't just mean less anxiety and depression, but just kind of a better outlook on life. You get to a point, I think, where if you're exercising on a regular basis or being physically active on a regular basis, sometimes you can be in kind of a funk and you're not really sure why. And then you realize, oh, today was a day when I didn't get to do my normal workout. It can work both to help kind of prevent negative things, but you kind of start to notice when you've been doing it for a while that you just don't feel quite right when you can't do it for whatever reason it might be. So it's got both the physical and the mental benefits, and we're learning more about it all the time and, you know, finding out that, you know, exercise, for instance, in people who are clinically depressed can actually be a useful treatment, in some cases as effective as or even better than antidepressant medication. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And is that because there's something going on in the brain with the chemistry of the brain as a result of the physical activity, or is that not clear?
It's probably got something to do with it, but it's not clear at this point. The studies that have been done primarily to this point, there are not a lot of them, but the ones that have been done with, for instance, clinically depressed folks have pretty much at this point been trying to just find out, does exercise work? Can it be another tool that physicians, psychiatrists, you know, counseling psychologists can use with people who are clinically depressed? Because we know that antidepressants don't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go through the kind of the list of the various medications until you find the one that does work. But we're starting to find out exercise works at least as well. But why it works yet, we're not completely sure. I think what we'll end up finding when we finally get to that point, it's both a physiological change, but it's also a psychological effect. You know, maybe it's a sense of mastery. I didn't think I could do this, and you know, by gosh, you know, I've been able to get up and go for a 20-minute walk every day this week. I feel better about myself just for having done that, for having accomplished a goal, or just kind of mastered something that I didn't think I could do.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure also that if people are tired all the time, if they feel like they can't even meet the minimum physical demands of life, that's a bummer. You know, mm-hmm. So I could see you could easily maybe get in some depression issues if you just feel you're just so exhausted that getting up is a big effort. And if you can't do your routine stuff, just the routine physical demands of life. I'm not talking about running a marathon. We're just talking about getting through life. Mm-hmm. You know, that could seem like an awful big burden. And I'm sure that has mood. It has effects on your mood.
Well, and, you know, before it gets to be a point where, you know, and that's one of the hallmarks of depression is just this kind of total lack of energy, even when you haven't done anything. But in folks, before they get to that point, one of the things it's kind of the most interesting paradox about exercise, it's something that obviously requires the expenditure of energy. And yet study after study after study shows if you ask people, how do you feel after they're done, they typically report feeling energized. So they've expended energy, yet they feel more energetic. They're not as tired. They're not as fatigued. They feel more vigor, more energy, you know, more of that, I can do this now, even though, you know, you work a long day, you come home and you're tired. The last thing that you can think about doing or that you typically want to think about doing is going for a workout. But, you know, most of the time, that can actually serve to give you a boost of energy and help you get through the rest of the day. Or, you know, starting the day off that way, it mm-hmm. gets you going on the right foot for the whole day.
Yeah. We're starting to really understand some of the physiological basis for the connection with the advantages of, you know, cognition and learning and mood enhancement. Some of this work has been reported by Art Kramer, Justin Rhodes. Our laboratory is starting to become interested in this topic. But, you know, there are some studies that show that there is a change in inflammation with exercise, routine exercise. There's a decrease in inflammation that may influence the brain function. And we're starting to test the theory that really that there are factors, beneficial growth factors secreted by muscle that may get into the circulatory system and also affect the learning and cognition process as well. So.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting, and that takes you a little bit beyond maybe the very first things that people hear. They say, well, it'll you work out regularly, it should help control your weight. It's good for your blood pressure. It's again, as I said before, it's good for your cardiovascular system. Mm-hmm. Maybe if there's any history of blood sugar issues in your family, well, mm-hmm. this will help with that, and mm-hmm. and maybe head off the possibility that you might develop diabetes. I mean, there's a all those things. But then it sounds as if even there are other things they may not be quite so clear. But even going beyond that standard list mm-hmm. of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it's a rare week that goes by where there isn't some new study that's come out that shows yet again what benefits you can get from physical, and it doesn't have to be training for a marathon. I mean, that mm-hmm. if that's something that you want to do and that's a goal, that's great. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of getting up and going for a walk, accumulating. If you're completely sedentary right now, going for a 10-minute walk, maybe try to do that 2 or 3 times a day and accumulate mm-hmm. 20 to 30 minutes. Try to do that most days of the week. That's at some point you'll get to the place where hey, this 30-minute walk isn't really enough. I want to maybe run or start to jog or mix jogging in with my walking or incorporate some strength training or, maybe I will try training for that half marathon next year or the marathon or the crazies that do all the really long stuff.
Yeah.
And, there is a myth that you have to lose weight in order to really reap those health benefits, protection from cardiovascular disease and diabetes. And there are studies specifically by Steve Blair at the University of South Carolina showing that, if you're still not losing weight, it's okay because you're really going to decrease your blood sugar level, which is going to, prevent diabetes. And that also has an effect, a spillover effect on protection from the cardiovascular disease, which is really caused by elevated blood sugar levels. So, mm-hmm. Just being able to, regardless of weight loss, if you're active, what's going to happen is that you're really going to prevent those diseases that cause death. And in terms of the mechanism, decreased blood sugar is one of the reasons why there's protection. But also, there's some new studies coming out showing that with exercise, just walking right after a meal, there's an increase in an enzyme called lipoprotein lipase, which helps clear some of the stored fats within our bloodstream that cause atherosclerosis. There's also an increase in those really beneficial HDLs, the beneficial lipoproteins that will help clear extra cholesterol from the bloodstream.
So. Yeah, that seems that one of the probably one of the basic things that people have heard of is, well, you have to be concerned about your cholesterol level. But that there are these two kinds of cholesterol. There's what's generically referred to as the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. And that you really want to have the bad low. But the good, that's actually you want to try to raise that. And there are some dietary things that you can do. But it seems like the only sure thing that's been found to raise the good cholesterol, the mm-hmm. HDL, is exercise.
Yeah, yeah. So, what I say in my class is the HDL acts as the trash collectors. They're the ones that go out and pull all that extra cholesterol away from our tissues, away from the vessels, and it takes it to the liver and helps destruct all of that extra cholesterol, which causes the atherosclerosis. So, the exercise is beneficial for elevating the HDL. Estrogen also increases HDL in women as well.
Oh, okay.
Very protective.
We have a caller here, and I want to get them in the conversation, but also for anybody who has just tuned in, I would like to introduce the guests, Marnie Boppert and Steve Petrozello. They are both in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois, and we're talking about exercise and the benefits of exercise, what it will do for you, and maybe also we can talk a little bit about how to get yourself to start if that's one of your goals and you're having a tough time. And you have questions about exercise and its effect on the body, you can give us a call, and they will do their best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. This is a caller in Champaign on our line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I read a study. Excuse me. I had to switch phones. I had seen a study that noted that even if you work out every day, if you have a sedentary workplace, that you still kind of have a strong risk of getting disease and death and such earlier than otherwise, despite I'm sorry, I'm having trouble concentrating. I think there's an echo coming back on my phone.
Well, if there is, we're not hearing it on our end, but I think I take your point, maybe we can talk a little bit about what you do for the, you know, it's great that you're exercise, but if you have a kind of a job like a lot of people do, where there's most of the time they're sitting in front of a computer or whatever, that's something that you can think about too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, any way that you can incorporate activity in that sedentary type of lifestyle, it would be very beneficial. So just getting up out of your chair and walking around the office, you know, doing exercises in your chair throughout the day, those have been shown to be very beneficial for, you know, allowing for those health benefits to occur.
And, you know, the topic you're talking about is, at least from my understanding, is relatively recent, you know, really trying to understand physical inactivity and what are the consequences of that. You know, I think we're going to learn a lot more about probably the bad things from having to spend most of our days sitting at a desk in front of a computer. I don't know that we have all of those answers yet, but certainly any way that you can incorporate some kind of activity, you know, the advice I've heard is, you know, every 20 minutes or at least once an hour, you know, get up, go for a, you know, 2-minute walk around the office, or, you know, go to the bathroom, but walk instead of taking the elevator, take the stairs. Anything that can just kind of get blood moving again is probably going to help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know there are jobs that don't allow that, but to the extent that you can figure out ways to incorporate it, it's probably going to be beneficial. I mean, let's face it, we weren't meant to be sitting in chairs looking at screens all day long. Our bodies were made to move. We've got an evolutionary history of being movers. Our muscles are made for movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of evolved into this much more sedentary existence. And really, it's only been in the last 40 to 50 years that we've seen as much sitting time as we have today, and it's maybe coincidence, maybe it's a causative thing that there's been a tremendous increase in chronic diseases, increases in disability in that same span of time. You know, if we can get more people moving, even if it's just little bits at a time, maybe that will end up being a very beneficial thing in the long run for health and well-being.
Yeah. I know. Is the caller still there, and are we getting at your question?
Well, I guess the other thing I wanted to address was, I guess specifically, that this study seemed to imply that even if, let's say, you work out every day for like half an hour, you know, intense exercise, that somehow doesn't make up for the you know, sedentary workspace, workday that you have. And I was just curious why that is.
Yeah, there, as I mentioned earlier, there are some studies that show that, you know, if you sit down, you eat a meal, and then get up and walk around, just that little bit of walking that you can do right afterwards would help decrease, you know, cholesterol levels and your glucose levels. And so I think that that's really, you know, what this study is getting at, is that there has to be some kind of constant activity throughout the day. And that's just really important. You have to be really conscious about making sure that you're doing that, though.
You know, and I wouldn't put too much stock into a single study. You know, one of the problems with the popular media is, you know, you get a study like this that's, you know, in some ways kind of shocking, that, you know, you can work out the way that we've always thought was beneficial, but if then you spend the rest of your day sitting, then it's almost like you didn't do anything. I would say let's wait and see if that kind of study can be replicated and those findings can be repeated before we get too alarmed by the fact that, you know, they're saying if you do work out but then spend the day sitting, that that's not very good. I have a hard time believing, just from an experience perspective, that if you're working out an hour a day, that that isn't going to help in some sense with your overall health. Even if you have a job that requires a lot of sitting the rest of the day, you're doing more than, depending on the statistics you look at, if you're working out, you're doing more than anywhere between 95 and 75% of the population does on a regular basis. So exercise, some kind of activity is better than nothing, even if you have a relatively sedentary job the rest of the day.
Okay, and if I know I don't want to monopolize the time here, but I have one quick follow-up question, and I'll get off the air. Is what do you guys think of the treadmill desks?
I think you got to be coordinated. that's actually really interesting. We actually have a faculty member in the department that has one. And clearly, you're not going to be able to walk very fast if you're trying to work while you're doing that. Again, that's I think right now what I would call a fad. I'd like to see some nice studies that are looking at whether that actually is beneficial in the long run. Certainly, it involves movement, and you know, if you have the ability to do your work while you're standing up, and even better while you're walking. Again, as long as you're careful not to injure yourself, it may be a good thing in the long run.
Yeah, the faculty member that does have that treadmill desk, she looks great.
Well, okay, I'm not so sure about that, but I wouldn't want my bosses to get the idea, oh, let's put a treadmill in the studio. Dave can walk while he's doing the show. I don't think so. We have another caller here. Must be someone listening on the internet because they're in Springfield, Missouri. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you for your program.
Sure.
I'm always delighted to hear it over the internet. My question is, because this discussion has been really appropriate for me, because I am a work-at-home systems analyst, so I'm seated a lot. What about, I keep hearing people saying, well, this will help prevent diabetes. What do you do if you already have type 2 diabetes? I mean, is it... do the same benefits come as far as lowering blood sugar, reducing insulin use, this type of thing?
It's the best thing that you can possibly do. So there have been studies that showed, of course, in healthy individuals, you know, individuals without type 2 diabetes, that exercise helps deposit glucose into the skeletal muscle. You know, you want to get it out of the bloodstream because it's very toxic to our tissues. It injures our tissues. There were some follow-up studies then in the later 80s showing that with individuals with type 2 diabetes, that exercise had the same beneficial effect. Of course, they had to exercise a little bit more frequently in order to reap those benefits. But it really, study after study will show you that exercise is more effective than medicine in terms of reducing your blood sugar levels.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There is a presentation on the internet, I don't know if you've seen it, called 23 and a half hours.
Isn't that great?
It amazed me because, you know, I'm one of these people who think, oh, well, if I'm not 7 hours a week at the gym, and I just saw this yesterday, and it was astonishing to me because it, you know, saying, okay, as long as you only stay seated 23 and a half hours a day, you know, sedentary, then we could do something. So I appreciated the comments, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, just for those who might not know what you're talking about, the this 23 and a half hours is it's a relatively short video clip that's on, I don't know if on YouTube, I guess, where a professor basically goes through all of these different benefits that Marty and I have kind of alluded to that you can reap from simply doing some type of physical activity 30 minutes a day. Mm. And it's called 23 and a half hours to really kind of emphasize that certainly there is 30 minutes that you can find somewhere in your day where you can, you know, get up and move around, and all of these different things that will happen as a function of that relatively small amount of time over the course of a 24-hour period. And it's actually, it's presented really, really kind of in a clever way, and it's got some a really good message. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
The question I wanted to ask, though, the talking about, because I live in the neighborhood here, so I spend a lot of time online, so the idea of getting up for like 10-minute deals instead of 30 minutes, mm-hmm. this is at least moving in the right direction.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't take 30 minutes away or more, moving for and what some of the recent guidelines are suggesting is, it isn't so much doing it all at once, but it's accumulating that activity. And their basic rule of thumb is try to accumulate 30 minutes on 5 or more days per week, which, you know, I hope for most people doesn't sound terribly onerous. It isn't go to the gym and get on a treadmill or an elliptical and work out for 30. You know, put on your, and it doesn't even have to be fancy shoes. Just put some shoes on and put on a coat if you need to and go out for a walk around the neighborhood. Plus you get the benefits of being outside and enjoying the fresh air.
And also those current guidelines also have shown that multiple bouts throughout the day are just as effective. So you can split it up into 3 different 10-minute bouts, and that's going to be just as effective as that one 30-minute bout.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate all of the message that you're carrying, and I'll let the rest of the folks talk.
All right. Thanks. Well, thanks very much. Well, we have another caller we'll get to in a moment. I have an email from somebody. We'll take other comments, talk some more with our guests. We'll just take a very short break. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Swires Land and Management Company, Danville; EAGCO Incorporated, Fairmount; Springfield Electric, Springfield; and Cannon Farms, Camargo. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. We're here weekday mornings from 10 to noon with 10 different topics. In the second hour today, we will talk with Henry Petrosky. He's a professor of engineering at Duke University and has written a lot about why things fail, things like bridges, for example, why they collapse. He's written about design failures, and certainly that happens. But in a new book that we'll be talking about, he writes about the human factors and says that these things are part of complex systems. People are part of them, and that often when something fails, like a bridge, it's not purely structural failure. It's a human failure. So we'll talk about that. Then tomorrow we'll talk about why nations fail. People in political science have asked that question, why it is that some nations are very successful and others aren't. And we'll be talking with Darren Acemoglu. He is an economist at MIT and the author of a recent book that looks at this, Why Nations Fail, The Origins of Power, Prosperity, and Poverty. That's the subtitle. And again, he says it's very much about people. And the institutions that they create. Well, you can hear those shows and a lot of others. You can look at our schedule if you go to our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. Also, you can listen to past programs that way. You can also find us on Twitter at Will Public Media and also on Facebook. In this hour of Focus, we're talking about exercise, the benefits of exercise, and trying to take questions about how people can incorporate exercise into their lives. And we have two guests here with us in the studio. We have Steve Petrozello. He is associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health. And also here in studio with us is Marnie Boppert. She is assistant professor in that same department, Kinesiology and Community Health. She also has a joint appointment at the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology. She has done research on the positive effects of exercise on the body. And one of the things that Steve is particularly interested in is the psychology of exercise. And we have talked a lot about the physical benefits of exercise, but one of the things that he's interested in is the effects that exercise can have on your mood, on how you feel mentally.
Yes.
You know, so not only is it good for your heart, it's good for your head.
Right? Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
We have another person here who would like to talk with us. And anybody else can call in 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller's in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that you don't necessarily need a treadmill desk to reap any benefits from standing at a workstation. My father is over 80 years old, and he was an active farmer for several years, and he got into his computer, and he was ending up getting rashes and fatigue, and his doctor said, John, how long have you been, you know, sitting during the day? He says, well, I spend most of my day sitting now. I said, you know, you should just be upright. Mm-hmm. And so he built himself a little standing workstation. Anytime he's on the computer, he tries to make sure that he's standing up and act, you know, not necessarily moving, but just being upright, and he's reaped some benefits from it. So just wanted to throw in my two cents.
I'm really glad you made that comment, because I just read a study yesterday that did show the beneficial effects of standing while you work. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, you're engaging your muscles when you're standing, postural muscles and other muscles as well. And, of course, that can have some definite, you know, health benefits. So, yeah, great.
Thanks so much.
All right, thank you. Have an email from someone here who writes this. For a retired person who is slightly overweight, doing a 20 to 30 minute walk 4 days a week is reasonable and easy. But if the walk has to be fast, and that's in quotes, so I'm not sure what they consider to be a fast walk, but if the walk has to be fast to raise heart rate, then it becomes a burden because you get all sweaty and you look a little strange if you're actually walking that fast. So they're interested in, say, what's the difference between, let us say, walking at an ordinary pace and if you're deliberately trying to walk fast?
Well, you know, if the leisurely walk, I mean, that's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a nice saying that even though you may not be running very fast or walking very fast, you're lapping everybody that's on the couch. But so you want to do something more than a leisurely stroll. I would say get over the fact that you might get a little sweaty and go for it. I mean, it doesn't take very long to drive around town or to walk around town and see people who are out there running, walking, riding their bikes, walking with poles, you know, those walking sticks. I mean, people will look goofy doing all kinds of things. I wouldn't be too concerned about what you look like while you're doing it. I would be more concerned about just getting out there and doing it. And if you want to walk faster than a leisurely stroll, walk faster. If you get a little sweaty, maybe you have mm-hmm. to take a shower or at least maybe just towel off. But that's a small price to pay for being concerned about what you might look like. Just mm-hmm. do what feels good. And if that means walking faster or maybe jogging a little bit or running or whatever, just do it.
I guess I thought that the thing that was important is that you walked at a sustained pace and that then you did that for a prolonged period of time. Like, you know, can you walk at a comfortable pace, but can you do that and maintain that and continue to do that for a stretch of 20 minutes? That maybe you don't have to necessarily have to be breathing hard to get the benefit of doing that.
No, you don't have to be breathing hard. I mean, I'll speak at it from a psychological perspective. There's several studies that have shown 10 minutes of walk. They did these interesting studies with college students where they would send some of them off for a 10-minute walk. They would give the other group a candy bar, you know, take a Snickers. They would come back. They would rate how they felt. Mm-hmm. Both groups felt better. But 2 hours later, those who went for that little 10-minute walk still felt more energized than the group that ate the candy bar, who at that point, 2 hours later, had crashed and burned. They were mm-hmm. tired, fatigued, mm-hmm. tense. So it isn't just how you're going to feel while you're doing it or right when you finish. It has some fairly kind of lasting benefits, not permanent, but, you know, something that'll help kind of lighten your mood, if you will, for, you know, as many as 2 to 4 hours after you've finished, even something like a 10-minute walk.
Okay, well, let's go to another caller here. This is also someone in Champaign, and this is line number one. Hello.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. A couple of things. One, I haven't heard you talk yet about the benefits of bouncing on a rebounder. I've heard so many good things about it, and especially supposed to be good for your lymphatic system, something about how when you hit that point where gravity sort of, you know, gets neutralized and then, you know, you come back down, that at the cellular level moves a lot of fluids in and out of your cells and then through the interstitial tissues. And then a note about the standing. For generations, the most important part of martial arts training, especially in Qigong, but other martial arts as well, that was only taught to the most, senior students that were going to carry on the lineage and was kept a secret from everybody else because this is what was the secret to becoming truly great at a martial art, was the standing meditations, which are a little more complex than just idly standing. You're meditating, you're maintaining a very relaxed but a very conscious structure at the time that you're doing it. But now research is showing, yes, there's an incredible benefit from doing that kind of standing.
Mm-hmm. I think we forget that we're really contracting our muscles when we're standing. Absolutely there's a benefit to that. Can you tell me a little bit more about the exercise you were referring to in the beginning? Because I'm not really familiar with that. It sounds interesting.
The little trampolines, those trampolines, they're all maybe a yard wide or across.
Okay.
And, bouncing up and down on those, I've read a number of things and doing it now. That not only is it a good cardiovascular exercise and can be that, but there's something about, when you get to that state of moment of suspension, before you come back down, that, you're neutralizing gravity out, and that at the cellular and interstitial level, that is moving fluids in a way that, just, when you're always in the state of gravity pulling on you, doesn't happen as efficiently. So it's extremely good for your lymphatic system.
Huh. Well, that's new for me. I haven't heard anything about that, so I'll have to think about it.
The bouncing on the trampoline is, one of the things that we're finally, I think, starting to figure out in science, even though people know this probably intuitively better than anything, you got to find something that you enjoy doing. And if that's bouncing on a trampoline, go for it. I'm not sure. I mean, if you think about someone who runs, for instance, there's moments during a run where you're suspended in midair as well. So I'm like Marnie. I haven't heard anything about the movement of these fluids. But in terms of the activity itself, as long as you're careful not to fall off the trampoline, if that's something that you enjoy doing, it's physical activity. Mm-hmm. And if you're enjoying it, you're more likely to keep doing it. I'd say go for it. It sounds like a fun kind of activity, a fun way to, if you will, get your sweat on.
Yeah, okay. Well, I want to thank the caller. We're coming down to the point here. We have about 12, 13 minutes left in the show. Other questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let me ask a different question. We've talked about various kinds of exercise that people can do. I have talked a lot about walking, which is a good thing. It does not require special equipment as long as you got a pair of shoes and, it's not raining and you're ready to go out there. That's good. I think, though, that people will probably be aware of the idea that there are different forms of exercise and they will do different things. And that if you were really going to have a well-rounded program, you would be doing things that would try to benefit, not only to benefit your heart, but also do something with your muscles, mm-hmm. do something with your flexibility, and that if you could, it would be good to do different kinds of things so that you're not doing the same thing every day, which is kind of boring, mm-hmm. but also does things for other parts of your body. I mean, how many different kinds of things do you have to do to try to get that well-rounded package of benefits?
Yeah, so the current recommendations for exercise, the ACSM guidelines, of course, they speak to the requirement for aerobic exercise, moderate intensity, 5 days per week, 30 minutes at a time, or more vigorous exercise, three times per week, at least 20 minutes at a time. But the the current guidelines added to the previous guidelines was the addition of the strength training, the resistance exercise, performing 8 to 10 different strength exercises. And that could be in the form of free weights or exercise machines, or, you know, there are different types of different weight balls that you can use. And then lifting 8 to 10 times to fatigue. And so, you know, my research really focuses on the prevention of skeletal muscle loss with aging. We lose about 0.5 to 1% of our muscle mass per year after the age of 25. And so, you know, it's really important that we preserve our muscle mass, because once we lose it, then we really become susceptible to metabolic disease. We're not able, there's no place for glucose in our bloodstream to be deposited, right? So it remains in the circulatory system. Same, you know, with just the ability to perform those activities of daily living, you know, dressing ourselves, you know, going grocery shopping, you know, just feeding ourselves, you know, basic activities, those decline. And so, you know, if we're not careful about preserving our muscle mass, it's estimated we can lose up to 13 years of our lifespan due to disability.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, if we're completely inactive, what can happen is about age 60, we do see the onset of disabilities. So arthritis, the inability to walk effectively. And so if we're not careful, we will lose 13 years if our average lifespan is, you know, about 75 to 78 years of age. And that's a shame, because you want to be able to really, you know, live your lifespan, you know, at a very high quality, you know, enjoying the rest of our lives. Yeah. So,
well, that's I know, and it maybe is also worth reminding people that because of the concerns we have about bone loss, mm-hmm. for women particularly, yeah. weight-bearing exercise is important. Even if you're doing what you should and you get your calcium,
mm-hmm.
you have to incorporate that in your bones. You need vitamin D and you need weight-bearing exercise.
Yeah.
And so that's another reason to not only you don't want to lose muscle, you don't want to lose bone,
yeah.
either.
And there's a theory that, you know, if we're losing muscle mass, we lose the ability to pull on our bones, and it's really that pulling, that strain, that's really important for maintaining bone mass. So again, the importance of the weight training, the strength training, is to preserve both muscle, but then also as a consequence of that, the bone mass as well.
And, you know, one other thing, in terms of strength training, that doesn't mean that you have to go to a gym, mm-hmm. and, you know, get a barbell or dumbbells and lift those. You know, I mm-hmm. think back to, you know, elementary school, high school physical education class, push-ups,
yeah.
sit-ups. There's all kinds of body weight exercises that you can do to strengthen muscle that don't require, again, special equipment. And, you know, you can find all kinds of crazy ideas on the internet, but it's something that's going to help with either maintaining or developing muscle strength. You know, again, as Marnie said, it's so important that we try to minimize the amount of muscle loss that occurs as we get older. You know, aging's a crummy thing, but there's so many things we can do to try to minimize that. And one of them is physical activity, you know, both aerobic, some type of strength training, incorporating flexibility, it's all going to be beneficial in the long run.
I have an email here from someone who's just interested in a couple of things. First, whether you have any particular comments on the use of a pedometer as a way of monitoring your exercise.
Well, you know, that's become kind of the big thing. You know, we've got a lot of technology all around us. Pedometers were kind of the first phase of that, you know, simply step counters and, you know, using that as a motivational tool. Try to accumulate 10,000 steps over the course of the day. Those have kind of evolved into accelerometers, which monitor movement in three dimensions. You know, Nike, of course, a lot of the big corporations now jump on the bandwagon. They've got their fuel band, so you can kind of incorporate the steps with the movement, and, you know, you try to get so many counts over the course of a 24-hour period of time, and it'll show you on your wrist how close you are to reaching your goal, and you can put it on the internet and see how you compare to other people. A lot of that is, if that's what you need, to motivate yourself to do something, then I say go for it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, as you incorporate physical activity into your daily lifestyle, whatever you have to do to motivate yourself to do that initially, and studies have shown this as well, people that get started and are able to stick with it, typically what we find is we start for the obvious reasons. You know, January 1st is a big day for everybody to start working out. They want to increase their health. They want to increase their fitness. And that's the number one reason almost invariably for starting. What people find as they continue to exercise on a regular basis is that that's still important, but suddenly it's, I need that exercise to just get away from everything. I need it as a way of releasing stress. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel better. You know, the psychological reasons become much more salient to people as they start to experience them. You know, they realize, oh, this exercise really does a lot of things, not just for my body, but for my mind as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's the person who wrote in this email has a second question, and this reminds me a little bit of our earlier conversation about HDLs and exercise, but mm-hmm. the person says they pointed to an article that appeared in the New York Times in early February titled Exercise as House Cleaning for the Body, which apparently stated that exercise speeds the removal of garbage from inside our body's cells, mm-hmm. and wanted to know, is there in fact any research at the university that's looking at that?
Yeah, so what he's referring to, he or she is referring to, is this process of autophagy, which is really turnover of the inside of the cell, cellular components. And it's a new concept, relatively new concept, that's evolving into something very important, showing that, if we're not recycling cellular constituents, then we really become diseased. Our cells become diseased, and health declines. And so, unfortunately, what happens with inactivity is that there's less autophagy. There's less cellular turnover. In fact, there's this thought now that autophagy is one of the causes of aging. So I think there are many more studies that need to be conducted to. Mm-hmm. You know, really verify that there's a role in aging and in health. But it's very interesting work so far. So, Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You were talking earlier about the fact that exercise will also help reduce inflammation. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are more and more cases in which we're seeing inflammation is implicated in various kinds of disease mm-hmm. processes. Yeah. But I'm thinking particularly of, you know, you get older, a lot of people, it's almost mm-hmm. inevitable you start to have some joint issues, mm-hmm. And that might, you know, perhaps joint pain might be a reason for people not to exercise or having some difficulty with exercising, and particularly, you know, you get out of bed in the morning and mm-hmm. you're a little creaky. Not that I know anything about that personally. Can you say that there is actually some benefit? Maybe you say, well, I am starting to have some joint issues, that you would say, oh, this is a good reason that you should want to be exercising.
Yeah, in fact, I had a student in my class, a James Scholar, who presented some research showing that, in fact, exercise is beneficial for those with arthritis. I mean, you have to be careful, and you should be in therapy if you do have arthritis. But, it's very important for reducing inflammation. And, benefits of exercise are endless, right?
It's kind of a negative reinforcer in that sense. And by that's a good thing. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is there are studies that have shown in people with rheumatoid arthritis, for instance, a disease of inflammation, that exercise actually takes away some of that pain. Now, not permanently, mm-hmm. but it can be at least a temporary, mm-hmm. you know, kind of an Advil, if you will, without popping a pill. It's all the other things that happen with exercise, along with the reduction of inflammation and the kind of removal of some of that pain for a period
of time. And speaking of pills, and, you know, I think it's important to mention that ibuprofen, an anti-inflammatory drug that many of us take for various reasons, can be really inhibitory towards the regeneration process, the healing process within the body. And so we have to be, you know, really careful in taking those types of drugs. I'm thinking specifically skeletal muscle. It really impairs the repair process post-injury, any type of injury.
So, really? Because mm-hmm. I would think that, you know, a lot of people, if they would have an injury, that those kinds of things, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, they think, well, that's what they're going to reach. for.
Absolutely, and it does work. But unfortunately, it's a vicious cycle where you get into, you know, this cascade of events where you, your muscles can't really come back from whatever injury has taken place. So it's sometimes better just to, you know, try to work through those problems with the minimum dose possible.
Okay. And I suppose, and it's just as we're kind of finishing up here, I guess it's probably also really worth mentioning if somebody was embarking on an exercise program, particularly if they have not been very active, it would be a good idea for them to have a conversation with their doctor, particularly if they have various kinds of pre-existing conditions. They might just want to say, you know, you got any concerns here you'd like to pass on, and how, you know, what kind of advice might you give about what I would do?
Well, I mean, it's always a good idea to talk with your doctor. The problem when you talk to your doctor about physical activity, and I'm probably going to annoy some physicians out there, but they don't get much training in medical school about physical activity and exercise. It's if you can find a physician that is physically active, that's better. But certainly that's a good place to start, and it's probably not a bad idea, especially if you're if you've never done anything or you haven't done anything for a long time. You know, try to find somebody who is knowledgeable that can give you some good advice on starting. And I would say that would probably not include checking on the internet first, because there's a lot of information on the internet and there's a lot of bad information on the internet. But again, I think in some ways Nike's got it right, and I'm not trying to be a shill for Nike, but if you want to do some kind of physical activity, just do it. Get off the couch, get out of that chair, and start moving. Take the stairs instead of the elevator. You know, walk instead of sitting. Jog if you're tired of walking. Walk faster. Don't be afraid to sweat. Just find something that you enjoy and do it, and it'll be beneficial.
Well, there we have to leave it. We're at the end of the time. We want to say thanks to Steve Petrozello and Marnie Boppert. They're both in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at University of Illinois for being the guest this morning. Thanks very much.
Thank you. It was our pleasure.